Hi, this is Kenneth Tuck, and hopefully you can hear why I would like to win the blue snowflake. Thank you.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Locke.
Welcome to Serotalk. Podcast, I think it's 15. This will be my 32nd podcast, so 17 tech chats and 15 podcasts. But whatever, it's all good and hopefully getting better every time. I am Michael Loff.
And I'm Ricky Inger.
Well, we are foregoing the tech news, a few things, but nothing too exciting, which is typical of the holidays.
Yeah, everybody's sort of relaxing and ready for nice three-day weekend. So they say, we're not going to have any big news for a little while.
So, we's going to make some big news of our own by offering, I think, a pretty awesome deal, special,
for
the Memorial Day weekend only. Would you like to describe it to our great listeners?
I would indeed. For just $299, that's $299, you get all the awesome power of System Access Mobile, which is normally $499, so that's a $200 discount. That's not all. You can also get System Access Mobile Network, your yearly subscription to that, for $99. That's $30 off the normal price. You can sign up as a new customer, or if you are an existing customer and you've got maybe the mobile network but you don't have System Access yet, or vice versa, then now is your time to address that and get all the coolness available to you.
And so just to elaborate on a couple things, first of all, the $299 buys you two computer licenses that A, have lifetime upgrades, and B, you yourself, without having to call or contact the company, can switch them on the fly. So if you change which two computers you want to use System Access on, you can do that yourself. Plus, you have a license for, simply go out and purchase a U3 enabled stick drive, whatever you call those little bad boys. Start as low as $20. You can have a third machine license that you take with you and just plug that stick into, and voila, your
you
XP.
You can take over any computer in the world.
That's right.
How
XP,
cool is that?
Vista, even Windows 7.
That's right.
Should you be so bold and daring. The $99, of course, aside from being a $30 discount, just if you've never played with SAMNet, have no idea what it is. It's a wealth of content. Over 1,700 described movies to date, thousands of radio stations, third-party email, which comes in very handy.
Oh, yeah.
When your own provider is not working or when you're traveling, the Socializer, which gives you voice chat capabilities with the same awesome quality you're hearing right here. You can speak with other users one-on-one or in groups. The Socializer with a great interface between Facebook and Twitter, so you can start out and get up to speed with those clients. Just so much more that we're going to do later in our first segment, Essay to Know. I thought it would be good to start with how to Essay to Go.
One more worthy thing to mention about the SA Mobile Network is that, speaking of traveling, let's say you got your laptop with you, but you left something behind on your desktop. The SA Mobile Network gives you the opportunity to remotely access that home computer. Or if you got your U3 key plugged into someone else's machine and you want to go grab something from one of your own computers, the SA Mobile Network gives you the ability to do that too.
That was handy when I was traveling this week, and I was able to grab a couple things off my computer and even send out some emails from my home computer that had some accounts and things that I did not have with me.
Yeah, you were able to sort of get out and about. You didn't have to be in your home office, but you were still as productive as ever.
That's right. I was staying connected. Other cool things going on, we have the contest, of course, we announced 2 weeks ago, and we did get a few entries, a few interesting ones, to say the least, but we did not get any people registering for the icicle, which
that
is
poor, the poor lonely icicle.
I know.
It wants a good home. Come on, people, all of you guys out there with XLR microphones, and I know you exist. And by guys, I mean guys and girls, of course.
I had a lady last night say, well, I have one, I just want maybe someone more deserving. And I'm like, well, you're as deserving as anyone, so apply
exactly.
for that.
Exactly. And I know that there are lots of you out there wanting that blue snowflake. We've gotten some great entries, but we just can't stop getting entries. We want more.
So beef them up. Send us an email. We'd like some voicemail, actually. More creative would be interesting. Tony Broom actually sang.
Like Serotek, the only filter, the only brand called Serotek gives you accessibility anywhere in the land. Serotek. Yes, I do need a new mic. This one sounds low and horrible. Thank you so much.
That's one thing you're up against. Do a little musical composition. That would be awesome.
Well, sing along with it. We did get 1 4-minute composition, which is interesting, but unfortunately that does not in and of itself meet the criterion. It must be a song about with some words about Serotek. So.
Yeah, and perhaps that particular composition, which was nice and happy and sort of relaxing, maybe that's what this individual thinks about when he thinks about Serotek, which is great. But maybe put some words to it and you'll be good to go.
Yeah, just do a little narration over it or something. But anyway,
that's right.
Just we've got everything from microphones roasting on an open fire.
That tastes like chicken.
That tastes like chicken but look like a sausage.
I don't want to know why he tasted it.
Trying to be creative, or maybe that's just the trend in Australia to sample anything that comes off the grill.
I think he did taste it.
Maybe he did. So anyway, keep those coming. Resources at serotalk.com, and we will definitely give them away on our next podcast. I'm trying to do the quick math. I think that will be June 8th. Have you, Ricky, noticed there has been, at least from my perception, an amazing number of blind folks who have jumped on the Twitter bandwagon, a lot of them through McTwit?
Yes, I think I could say that it's directly attributable to that, interestingly enough, because when McTwit was released, I had a certain number of followers, and suddenly my followers increased, and I don't think it's because I suddenly became much more interesting. I think it's just that people were telling their friends, hey, check out this new awesome Twitter client. And a lot of blind people did that and are now very happy with it. And I, for one, am a big McTwit fan.
Yes, my followers have doubled, and I'm very excited about that. And, of course, you can join us and stay up on what's going on by going to twitter.com/Serotalk. Serotalk. I'm going to do a little musical
ditties. Hey, you're going to do your own little sing-along.
Get people in that frame of mind. We're going to do subliminal power
That's
of
right.
suggestion kind of thing.
Serotalk. Serotalk. Accessibility anywhere. If you want to follow me, I'm on twitter.com/Ricky, R-I-C-K-Y, _ Inger, E-N-G-E-R.
What I enjoy is the evening chats.
I love those too. You know, I have for the last couple of weeks been involved in just some impromptu chats which have taken place. They weren't necessarily scheduled, but one person said, you know, I feel like chatting. Nobody's in this room, but I'm just going to go ahead and open up the room. And as soon as this person did that, people said, hey, there's somebody in a room. I think I'm going to go join. And by the time I got there, there were 12 or 13 people. And so that's sort of a lesson to you guys. If you see a room that's empty and it's a room with a topic name that you want to talk about, by all means, open that room. And if you open it, they will come and join you. I guarantee it.
We were chatting the other night till 5 in the morning. Yikes.
That is insane. By the time I left at 1, I figured you guys would stay up for maybe another hour. But I heard from a couple of people. Oh, I left at 4:30.
But interesting stuff. I mean, you learn so much from different people and their experiences and find out, wow, we're not as different as maybe we thought. I think there's almost maybe 2 degrees of separation when it comes to blind folks. Everybody knows everybody or something about someone that your friend knows, and that's crazy.
It is really insane, but it's wonderful. And I think that's really what we're about. We talk so much about social networking, and we're always going on about Facebook and Twitter and MSN and all this kind of stuff. But really, the ultimate goal is just to get people connected. That is what Serotek is, connected technology. And when we see this group of people subscribe to the network and actually taking advantage of the chat features and really just hanging out and getting to know each other, that's awesome. It's social networking at its finest.
Try it out for 30 days if you like, or take the plunge and $99, you won't go wrong. You have that remote access, which to me has paid for itself on the first day, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So unless you have anything else to cover, we will make way for Mr. Mikey and his HP DV2.
Awesome. Bring it on, Mr. Calvo, and I will see you all in a couple of weeks.
Well, in our efforts to keep you up on the latest and greatest hardware, and just because Mikey likes to play with new toys...
Yeah, right.
Tell us about your new HP DV2. We talked about it in the last podcast, but you just got it, so now you've had a little time to play with it. And that new AMD chip in there, I'm curious how it compares with the Atom. Why don't you talk about that?
Well, it's interesting, Michael, because this product, I do have kind of a love for these types of mini form factors. I think every geek is kind of looking for that one device that does it all, you know? This is a nice one, but this ain't it.
Netbooks went as small as possible, then kept getting larger and larger, so they're trying to find that form factor of how large can it be, how light or heavy can it be, and still be small. So it's not a netbook, it's not a notebook, right? But it's like a 12-inch display or something.
Well, let's go back a little bit and talk about netbooks came onto the scene about 2 years ago. They started from the Asus. I've lost track of all the different Asus models. I think the other day I found there was 32 different models out there of netbooks. But they started at seven-inch screens. They were really small. They had 900 megahertz processors, and that just wasn't working. And they were all trying to get out here. It started really before that with the ultra-mobile PC, which died on the vine. So they came up with this new concept called the netbook, and Intel came in with an Atom processor, low voltage, 1.6 gigahertz processor, paired it up with a gig of RAM and, you know, some form of hard drive, whether it be solid state or about an 80 to 160 gig hard drive, and ran it with Windows XP. HP then tried, well, they came out with an 8.9 version of the Asus, and then everybody started jumping on board with 8.9, and then I think it was MSI that came out with the first 10-inch netbook. So now, when MSI started with that, everybody was like, it's getting closer to being a notebook, and then everybody started falling in love with these 10-inch notebooks. It was the sweet spot. We saw things like the HP 2133, an absolute flop. It was a gorgeous machine on the outside, some of the best audio I've ever heard, but the thing was just a piece of garbage from the inside. It was a VIA processor running, they claimed, at 1.6 gigahertz. Vista Business, and that was a dog. I mean, even with the 2 gigabytes, someone at HP, he says to me, "Do you have XP lying around?" I said, "Sure." He said, "Well, then install that." And that didn't even really help, although I have a friend at Microsoft who's been carrying a 2133 and loves the thing. I can't stand it. I ended up getting a replacement for the 2133 called the Mini Note 1000. The thing that was beautiful about the HP 2133 and the Mini Note 1000 and the subsequent 2140, which was the successor to the 2133, the 1000 and the 2140 ran the Atom processor. The 1000, as you guys have seen at ATIA or at CSUN, and we'll be at the conferences this summer with a lot of these netbooks and notebooks for people to see. Well, the 1000 feels real plasticky. It's very thin. They didn't come out with a 6-cell battery until late February for it. That actually happens to be my machine of choice. That's the one that I find myself throwing into my bag mostly of all the netbooks that I have access to. And I have the MSI Wind, and I have a Samsung NC10, and the Dell Mini, which we won't even talk about. When I saw the DV2, the first thing that intrigued me about it was the fact that AMD swore up and down that they would never get into the netbook market.
Yeah, well, as the old saying goes, money changes everything.
Yeah, money talks and the rest walks. This machine, for what it is simply gorgeous. It is a thin machine. It's about 0.9 inches thick. It's a little hefty. It weighs 3.8 pounds. It's similar to the HP Mini line of PCs in its keyboard. It's a 92% keyboard. By the way, it is thundering here. I don't know.
Yeah, a nice little storm going on in Orlando. And so folks know, because it's not your usual Barry White thing, you are actually talking on the HP DV2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm on that today. And I'm sorry I didn't mention that at the beginning. The machine has that 92% keyboard that HP really has done a great job with. And that it's got a beautiful right-hand shift key. The upside-down T or the arrow keys are great. Enter key is awesome. And I wish that the function keys were a little bit bigger. They're really tiny. But, you know, the rest of the keys are actually very large, and they're laid out in the right places. The control key is on the very left, and then the FN key is right next to that. But I believe that in the BIOS, you can actually change, you can flip-flop those if you want to. The 2140 has this big battery on the back. I call it the bubble butt battery. And it's got HP stamped on the front of the cover. They brought that aluminum-type cover over to this DV2. It is a gorgeous, it's got like chrome accents. Now, I hear from my wife that the cover and everything, it picks up fingerprints. I'm feeling around the top of the machine, and right up on the top, I don't know if I just covered it, my voice or whatever, but there's the microphone. Is that?
Yeah, you game on.
That's the microphone. And then right next to it is the video camera. It's a little small eyeball type thing. And then you've got this screen with the bezel around it. Now, on the left-hand side of the machine, starting at the upper left-hand corner, you've got a gigabit Ethernet port, a VGA port. Check this out, an HDMI port.
Oh, so nice. This one,
it does do high fidelity, you know, HD video. You've got two USB ports, and you've got the fan port right under that. And we're going to talk about the fan in a second. On the right-hand side, starting at the top, you've got the Kensington lock slot thing, power connector, right? You've got another USB port. You've got your two audio jacks, being your microphone and your line out. And then you've got a 5-in-1 card slot, okay, and it handles all kinds of different kinds of cards. And then under that, you've got a button that you can use to turn Wi-Fi on and off. And I think what it actually does is it turns off the radios, because this also has a Bluetooth option. The one that I have has the Bluetooth installed. I don't know if it's going to become an option later. It did. When I was on the HP website getting this thing, there was only one version. I wish I had you had gotten this earlier, because until May 30th, I think I mentioned it when I got the unit, there was a $30 discount. But, you know, remember something, people, when you buy anything online, right when you're sitting at the checkout, go open up Google in another window and type in whatever the name of the store is, and coupons or coupon codes or those types of things, savings codes or whatever, because you're going to probably find something somewhere, and it doesn't hurt. It says save yourself a couple more dollars even on top of the good price. Under that button, you've got the it's a little slide lever, one of those things that you kind of pull towards you and let go, button to turn the machine on and off. The machine is very quiet. The specs are the following. You've got a Neo processor, the Athlon Neo processor. It is running at 1.66 gigahertz. The video, on the other hand, unlike the Intel, is not shared video. It is a standalone. It's an NVIDIA, I think it's a 3416 or 3016 or something like that. It is a 512 megabyte video card. The system comes with 4 gigs of RAM, and it comes running Windows Home Premium 64-bit edition. So let me tell you, it's got to be a pretty gutsy machine to run that stuff. I'm actually talking to you on the system running Windows 7. So this is Windows 7. This is not Vista. I took Vista out of here. I put Windows 7 64-bit edition. I know that other screen readers have just gotten that. We actually have been doing that since the beginning. When we first introduced 64-bit edition, we cover from server 2003 forward. Other products do not. We cover the 64-bit edition very well. Now, these are the good things, okay? Now I'm going to gripe about the bad things.
Now, one of the things, I understand it's affecting your manhood. A little warm on the lap there, huh?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. If you're looking for a heating experience, this is the machine to do it. When it's doing video-intensive applications, I read in one of the reviews that it actually got up to 112 degrees on the bottom and 95 to 97 degrees on the hand rest where the mouse pad is and everything. By the way, the mouse pad is killer. It feels very nice. It's nice and shiny. The thing I like the most about it, it's got a little button that you can just turn the mouse pad on and off. No going through menus, no none of that junk. So this is where HP gets a big thumbs up for me. It does not have an optical drive. It comes with, though, a dual-layer DVD burner with LightScribe technology, all included in the price. This is a $749 system. I actually picked it up for $30, less than that because of the coupon. It's a lot of computer for the money. The battery is a 4-cell, but the power of it is twice as much as the Dell Mini 12. It does do light 3D graphics for video gaming, not that we'd be into that. There's two kinds of machines that are differentiated by Intel, and that is media consumption versus media production, right?
Yeah,
and
you just don't think of a netbook as a production machine.
No, of course not. Well, this system actually, I wouldn't have a problem running SoundForge or, you know, any of my audio editing stuff on this machine, and the audio out of the unit isn't too shabby. I like the unit. I mean, I would like it not to be as hot. It does turn the fan on a lot if it is heating up. So for blind people that need the fan to know if the thing is on, hey, that's a good thing. And I am on battery right now. While we've been talking, let me see. I started 100% charge.
73%.
And we've got 73% going. The battery lasts about 4 hours, 4.5 hours with Wi-Fi going.
And
you know,
Skype, which is a slightly intensive app.
Yeah, so it isn't bad, dude. I like the machine. My congratulations to HP and to the folks over at AMD for this new Neo processor platform. I know that they didn't want to get into it, into the netbook space, and this is more than a netbook. But, of course, it brings us into that argument, you know. So the folks over at CNET, over at Buzz Out Loud, call them notbooks. It's not a netbook. It's not a notebook. It's a notbook. It's kind of a... It's a 12.1 screen. In the coming weeks, I'm going to be doing a review on a product called the MSI Slim, X Slim. And MSI's got a machine called the X Slim 320, which is a 13.1 screen size. And it's about an inch thick. It's very similar to this, but a little bit bigger screen with an Atom Edition processor, 1 gigabyte of RAM and XP. And then they've got the X Slim 340, which it's going to be running a low voltage, ultra low voltage processor from Intel. I believe that's a dual core processor. So we're going to see how that stacks up. And that product, the top of the line product from there, is going to run around 900 and change. It's going to be under $1,000. So I'll be very interested in seeing this kind of new spectrum that's coming out.
I saw where Asus and some other companies are going to do the same thing and kind of get in that 12 or 13 inch arena.
I personally think that these companies are struggling to sell something. And what's happening is they're A, confusing the market badly, and B, they're butchering the heck out of all their other products. This has got to be doing something to people who buy the bigger machines.
Yeah, because the question becomes, does size matter? Because if you could buy a 17 for less, do you maybe want that larger screen and maybe greater capabilities of having that extra space? Or does, you know, the lightweight matter to you? And apparently that is the allure for a lot of people for the netbook.
You know, unless you go out and do your homework, you don't know what the differences are.
And you need to test drive them. You know, when people with partial vision, you need to make sure that it's going to be large enough, the screen is going to meet your needs.
We want people to have information. We are not the end-all be-all reviewers. I don't want ever to be known as more than just a geek that likes to play with tech toys, and this is my opinion. I use this stuff every day. I travel with it. Because of my relationship with Serotech, I have the ability to load a bunches of different operating systems and that kind of stuff on it, so I can do for you, the public, what you may not be able to do for yourself. But I'm not a professional reviewer of any kind. Neither is anybody else that really does stuff for the podcast. We're just a bunch of geeks that want to share a bunch of information. So take it for what it's worth. Hey, listen, it's the HP Pavilion DB2. If you don't take my word for it, go out and Google for a review. There's several great reviews that were done with all the tech specs you'd ever want to know about the high definition and the audio and the this and the that. For me, it's a cool device. I'm still on my quest. You know, I still haven't found what I'm looking for, but this is a very, very neat product. Congratulations, HP. Rock on.
What follows is a demonstration of how to launch SA2Go and how to set up an account and get system access working on your computer. The way this is done is you may press the start button followed by the letter R to run. If you have an older keyboard that doesn't have the start and Windows keys, you can press Control Escape to accomplish the same thing. I'll do that now and press the letter R and type in www.sa2go. That two is spelled T-O, so www.satogo.com. I will press Enter.
Welcome to System Access to Go. Please press Enter to begin. Please press Alt plus R to continue.
Now that is a run dialog. So now it is downloading the application. We'll be asked shortly to press Alt-R again.
Please press Alt-plus-R again to continue.
Pressing Alt-R, and shortly we will have the prompts to either log in or create a new account. The powerful thing about this is that as long as you have an internet connection and some audio speakers or a pair of earphones, you can make any computer, Windows-based, accessible.
System Access to Go. Login. Press Alt-H for help. If you have an account with the System Access Mobile Network, please enter your account number and PIN to log in. Otherwise, you may press the Create an Account button to register. Logging in is optional, but we strongly recommend that you log in so you can fully take advantage of SA2Go's features. Account number. Editable text.
Now again, logging in is optional, and one of the biggest benefits is System Access will remember your preferences. So if you like your pitch a little higher or lower, your speed a lot faster, or maybe even slower, you can set all of those things. And as soon as you get logged in, it will remember that and restore those values for you. Now again, if you've never done this before, you'll have to click on the Create a New Account and fill in the information. Let's take a look at it.
PIN, pass, login, create a free account to save settings, System Access to Go, register, first name, editable text, last name, editable text, company or organization if any, editable text, current email address, editable text, address line 1 optional, editable text, address line 2 optional, if any, editable text, city, editable text, state or province if any, editable text, zip or postal code, editable text, country, drop-down list, phone number, editable text, desired username, editable text, send me announcements of new Saratech products, services, features, and promotions by email. Checkbox, not checked, register.
The phone number and the email address are required, and the reason is, if you set up an account and maybe forget what your username is, or if your username is unavailable, we can contact you. Likewise, you will get that information via your email account. So those settings are certainly required. So anyway, you can create the account or...
Account number, editable text.
If your System Access should ever become corrupted for some reason, you can simply log in. Simply go to sa2go.com as we've just done, follow the prompts, and now enter your username or your telephone number.
8-1-2-4-0
and your PIN.
Login. You're logged on. Please wait.
Now you notice,
see, I like desktop, my... SA Mobile Desktop, list, SA Mobile Network Home.
So there you go, 11. I have my deck talk speaking faster and deeper. Have him sound like Barry White. I think he's a little easier to understand. Now, if we want to install it, we simply go into the menu for System Access, which is Modifier key. That's either the Insert key on your numpad or the Caps Lock key on the left above your left Shift key. So I will hit Insert F.
System Access menu, connect to the System Access Mobile Network.
So the first option is to connect to the mobile network to take advantage of all of the great content available to you.
Preferences.
You can go into the preferences.
Remote control another computer.
Remote control another computer.
My account. A.
Go into my account.
My account. My account. List. Repair System Access on this computer.
So if you're having any problems at all, choose Repair System Access on my computer.
Install System Access Mobile on a U3 Smart Drive.
Install System Access Mobile on a U3 Smart Drive. So if you have a U3 enabled USB drive, you can do this and you will be able to take System Access to any other computer without the need for going to sa2go.com.
Edit contact information.
Edit your contact information. If you have a change in your secondary outside email address, or you move to a new location and want to update your address or change your telephone number, you can do that there.
Good morning, Mike and the Newsman. Set name for outgoing messages.
Set name for outgoing messages. That's the name that's displayed when you are communicating with other people via instant messaging clients or the socializer.
Manage machines.
This is where you can go in, and yes, even you yourself can add your second machine license. You can remove a license if you no longer wish to use system access on a dedicated machine. We'll go in here and look.
New window. Manage machines list. Christian AS624 primary.
There's my primary machine, and that's designated as such, meaning that's where your home server is. So if you're out in the field, you can automatically send things, download them to your home server instead of where you are. So if you're Aunt Mamie's computer and you really want to download something but don't want it on her machine, you want to send it home so that when you get home, you can investigate it later. There's my netbook. So as you heard, I received a message from the instant messenger. Now, all I have to do is press Control-Shift-M to review that message. If I heard it,
conversation message.
If I heard it, I am automatically placed in the edit box. But if I didn't, I can simply up arrow and read the message and find out what someone wrote me.
Message. Scott, warning, like any newsman. Message. Editable text. Blank.
Scott just wanting to know if there's any news. No.
No.
Scotty, Scott, no. No news here.
Here. Send. Message sent. Message. Editable text. Blank.
Now it's ready for other comments, or if I think that I really don't want to do any more messaging, I can simply hit escape.
SM mobile disk.
Close that window, and I see already Scott is typing back to me, as indicated by that sound. So we'll wait here and see what Scotty has to say.
Scott, new Ubuntu 9.04 is available for download. I'm going to get it after the text and give it a try. I'll do this morning just before 10 a.m. the time.
So again, Control-Shift-M to get those instant messages, and escape when you're done. Well, as we mentioned in the past on the Sero Talk podcast, what we are doing is cross-promoting, letting you know about other great podcasts that are taking place. And here's another one that started about or slightly after we did in November of last year. It's the Bill Bullis Friday Morning Podcast, right? Is that what you call it there, Bill?
That is. It's Friday mornings, except for when I'm lazy, tired, or otherwise occupied. then it goes on the weekends. But no, usually we try to have it up on Friday.
And that's actually good because, you know, I've learned that most people listen on the weekends. Give me a little background about yourself. Who is Bill Bullis?
Well, I'm an access technology specialist for the state of Alabama. I am originally from Brooklyn, New York, so that's why I don't have the Alabama accent, y'all. I started working in some capacity or other when I was 15 years old. My career ended up at Social Security, and I was doing stuff there in Baltimore at Social Security's headquarters, working with their accessibility department. And I decided to look for work outside the federal government just because of a lot of things, most of them, you know, management type things. I mean, I loved the work at Social Security, and I loved the people that I supported, but there were some issues that I couldn't, you know, come to terms on with management. So I decided to leave. And work for the state of Alabama. And I found that on ACB's job link, believe it or not. Interviewed for it over the phone. They liked what they heard. They liked my resume. They liked my references. They called me down, and I've been having fun ever since. I've been doing that for 3.5 years now. That's where it mostly is right now. I mean, my work is around the state of Alabama. I do, you know, all the national trade shows like NFB, ACB, AER, you know, things like that, CSUN. I work with the Department of Rehab in Alabama, and I have a really good time doing it.
That's pretty cool. Now, you had told me in the past that you're kind of involved in about every purchase that's made in the state for AT. Is that correct?
Pretty much. I'm involved as far as, you know, what the right equipment to buy is, and we give client choice for that. We don't tell our consumers what they can and cannot use. They tell us what's, you know, what they want. If it's something that's doable for their line of work, for whatever work they're going into, then we make a decision based on that. You know, there's a lot of people that will come out with a wish list of equipment. It's not just, hey, get me all this stuff, and then we get them whatever they want. It doesn't work that way.
In the past, I know in the 70s, you could get almost anything you wanted, and then in the 80s, it got a little more like, get the job first or prove to us you can get the job. So it was a catch-22. And then we'll get you the equipment when we know what you need. So it was kind of hard to prove to an employer that you could do the job without the equipment first. But how does that work today? I mean, how do you approach that?
I think we're pretty reasonable. Yes, we want there to be some type of job in sight. But the key is that, you know, if you're a client of any rehabilitation program, the key is that you are in control of your job search. It's not your counselor that's going to find a job for you. It's not your rehab teacher. It's not an O&M instructor. It's you. It's all about you. The truth of the matter is, if somebody is going to work for you, you're the best person to do that. because you know what your wants are, you know what your likes, your dislikes, all that stuff. So as far as equipment goes, if there's at least some type of job in sight, we're not saying there's got to be, you know, find you a job first and then start training on the equipment. A professional person who's looking for a job needs to know how to use equipment before they even get into that whole job search thing. So try to hit it as early as possible, but we also have to be very realistic. You got to accommodate as many people as you can with X amount of dollars. And, you know, sometimes the money does actually come into it. We have to be careful about what we buy. So I talk to different vendors, different manufacturers, and try to get good prices for the state. That way we can serve more people with the same amount of money. We're not a business. You know what I mean? We're not here to make money, but we are here to put out good product. And that product is you, you know, the person who's looking for that job. We want to train you well. We want to give you the tools that you need and then send you on out there. As far as, you know, purchases go, again, you know, if we save money, and there are some really good manufacturers out there that hook us up with good pricing because we do a lot of business with them, the more they do that for us, the more people we can serve with the money that we're budgeted for that year. It's a good working relationship that's necessary amongst everybody. You got to have a good working relationship with your counselor. Counselor has to have a good working relationship with a guy like me. And I've got to be doing my job with the vendors and manufacturers and stuff.
Now, how do you deal with getting the people the appropriate skill sets that they need? I know now that most people are mainstream, there's a pretty high illiteracy rate. Some would argue if a totally blind person doesn't know Braille, they are technically illiterate. Maybe their grooming skills aren't up to par, or their traveling, you know, mobility, O&M. How do you get those things taken care of so that they present themselves well when they go into the workforce?
Well, our state is a little bit different than the majority. I mean, there are some states that are like ours, but we don't contract necessarily out. We hire our own rehab teachers. We hire our own counselors, obviously, like most states do. We hire our own O&M instructors. So we don't contract out these jobs. We don't pay, in other words, based on the closure. So the contract agency wouldn't be forced to rush you through the program so they could get a closure and a payment. By hiring our own people, we give consumers, you know, the time and the attention that they need. And then, of course, you know, once you're at your place of employment, there's a little bit of follow-up. You know, there's like a 90-day period there where you can do some stuff. And that 90-day period can be extended if something comes up. You can also obviously be reopened if something comes up, you know, while you're going through work. I mean, there's something called a rave case. Somebody could be working for 15 years and start to lose, you know, vision, and something might change, and we can open a case based on a rave. And a rave is retaining a valuable employee. That's what it stands for. So we're there to make people as employable as possible, to give them the skill set that they need. And some people, you know, a lot of people already come in with a pretty great skill set, depending on what they're wanting to do. So we sometimes, you know, have to work real hard. And sometimes, you know, the person's already got real good skills and we just need to make some modifications or adaptations to stuff, and they're good to go.
Screen reading technology. They're totally blind. They need one. And then determining which is best, because some people just go on what they hear. Well, you know, JAWS, as some has called the Kleenex of the industry, and it's not saying anything bad about them, but I mean, there's some counselors that say, well, you know, they equate the word screen reader with JAWS, but maybe Window Eyes would work for them, as was the case when I worked at the Better Business Bureau, or another instance where System Access would be appropriate. But the person comes in, they don't really have the background, and they're kind of excited about any technology that's thrown in front of them, but yet you really don't know unless you've had a few days to play around with it.
Well, exactly. And that's what we do during an assessment. All three screen readers are very, very competitive. Different features and different, you know, hotkeys have been added. When one comes out, the other one soon follows. And I'm not saying, you know, a lot of times JAWS isn't the first to come out with stuff. A lot of times Window Eyes isn't the first to come out with stuff. What it comes down to is a person's comfort. If you're comfortable with the keystrokes that are available, and again, this is all in the assessment. You know, you show somebody, a good assessment will show somebody all the competing products. It's not just one. And, you know, in my experience, you know, being, you know, working in Baltimore, working in New York, you know, things like that, I've seen that a lot of people that do assessments tend to want to train or lean toward the product that they are most comfortable using. And that's not necessarily what's going to work for a consumer. our people that do the assessment will show you each and every one of those screen readers, explain to you not only the strength of the screen reader, but what working with the company is like. If you're out there and you're needing tech support, some companies have, you know, good tech support and some don't. We're lucky enough to be in an industry where it's small enough that you know the people that work at tech support. If you've called once or twice, you kind of know some of these folks. If you call Cerotech tech support, like for example, I'll call Cerotech when we use a remote incident manager. If I ever need to talk to somebody, you know, I know Ricky Inger is going to be there. And I establish a good relationship with folks that work at tech support. So, you know, I know what the strengths are. I know what some of the weaknesses are. The truth is, to keep your personal preference out of it is hard to do, but it is doable. There's literature out there. We give our consumers all the information that the companies actually put out. We let them make a decision on their own.
Now, how supportive is Alabama on, say, if someone comes to you and they want to be an entrepreneur and actually have their own business? How do you evaluate if they have the skills or abilities to do that?
It's evaluated a lot like it is anywhere else. You obviously have to have a business plan. And there's a lot of people there that are very, very successful running their own business. We have a consumer or former consumer who now runs their own computer-based business, you know, where they do tech support and remote support for customers. We have folks, obviously, in the Randolph-Shepard program, which you know, a lot of people see the Randolph-Shepard program as just filling vending machines, and that is not what it is. Yes, that's part of the job in some cases, but the Randolph-Shepard program is a legitimate business. You still have to do your paperwork. You still have to hire and fire employees. You still have to maintain stock. You still have, I mean, there's a lot of things involved with it. It's not just somebody driving over to a vending machine, filling it up, and taking out the money. There's a lot of stuff involved. As a matter of fact, there's a 6.5-month training program to do the Randolph-Shepard program, and that is a program that is an entrepreneurship. I mean, that's something that's your business. Yes, the state assists you. Yes, there's a lot of incentives to be a Randolph-Shepard, you know, vendor, but it is your own business. Anybody who comes in who wants to have their own business, we don't push them toward Randolph-Shepard. You know, whatever idea they have, if it's something that's feasible, we work with them, no problem.
Now, you mentioned working for the Social Security Administration, and I'm curious because I know a few folks who have, and some people made as much as $50,000 a year, which sounds great. You think, wow, blind person making $50,000, that's awesome. But I don't know anyone that's worked in that particular administration that has been happy with their work, counting down the months, days, and hours until they retire.
A lot of blind people get hired into the teleservice center at Social Security, which means that they take calls on the 800 number. So when you call 1-800, you know, 772-1213, that's Social Security's 800 number. The blind folks, a lot of them that are hired at Social Security, are manning those phones, and they're answering questions. They're looking at people's records. They're making sure, you know, people's applications, their payments, their checks, all that stuff is on time. If you want to change your direct deposit, change your address. They're all working in those centers. And for what that job is, the pay actually is very, very good. If you want to look it up online, the pay scale for a teleservice representative goes up to a GS-8. And then there are some claims representative positions that go up to a GS-11, which is a lot more money. And those are the folks that see people face-to-face. Now, there are some totally blind people that do those claims representative's jobs. There are some that even do those jobs by phone only. It has been my experience that very, very, very few blind employees go past that point. So if you want to get into management, if you want to get into a higher level of work, you have to be one of the select few, basically, is what it comes down to. And I'm talking about the percentage of promotions at Social Security. And again, this is just my experience, has been very, very low. They tend to hire blind folks in groups. That way they can do a class for blind folks. And that may be a good thing to some folks, but let's say to somebody like me who really wanted to be promoted and worked very, very hard at being good and trying to get promoted, if there wasn't a class of employees that were blind that were going to be trained for that particular job, Social Security was not going to consider me for that job. So there's good and bad in grouping all the blind folks together. Some blind folks may be happy where they're at and they don't want to get promoted. Well, you know, I was one that did, and I wasn't willing to wait I don't know how many years until they decided to hire a few blind management people and train them all in the same class. I didn't see a future in that, and I wasn't going to wait around. it's a good place, Social Security, to get your start. It really is. If you want to do other things, you can get that Social Security job if you want it. Work there for a while, earn some money, get some experience, and then, you know, you can move on to other things once you've gotten that experience. You can be looking for other jobs while at Social Security. There's no, you know, just because you get hired somewhere doesn't mean you have to stay.
That first job is the hardest, right?
It is, because when people ask you about your resume, to some extent, you're at a disadvantage. You know, you don't see very well, or you don't see at all. You know, a lot of folks I've noticed are very self-conscious. You know, when that happens, you know, first job interview, first job. It is pretty hard to get, because when they ask you, you know, there's always a part in that interview where they go, okay, well, so let's talk about your resume. And a lot of blind folks, when they're first starting out, you know, on your resume, you've got volunteer this, you know, internship that. And it doesn't look, I guess, as competitive as somebody who has all these, you know, well, I served tables, or, you know, I worked at a car repair. Those are paying jobs. It's just harder to compete. And I guess that's why they do that non-competitive hiring, where they hire blind folks in classes, because they're just going to find the best blind folks they can find and just hire them. Everything's got to be done in groups. And at the beginning, maybe that's a good thing. But as you progress, I might move faster or slower than some people. I don't feel that I should be grouped in a class just because of my vision impairment. We do have a training center in main cities in Alabama, mainly there for our employees. But if we ever need to do training classes with consumers, we can do that. And once in a while, I actually do volunteer to do what I call community-based training, which means anybody in the community can come in. All you got to do is just let me know in advance that you're going to be there, and let me know what screen reader you want to use, and game on. We've done internet classes. We've done classes on Microsoft suite of applications, the Microsoft Office, Outlook, Word devices like the Victor Reader Stream. I kind of specialize in Victor Reader training because I've just been using it since day one. Since I got it in the mail, I haven't stopped using it. It always comes with me. I'm always looking at, you know, what the new features are when an update comes out. I think I've done a really good job putting training together for the Victor Reader Stream, because I think it's a tool that a lot of blind folks are going to use for a very long time.
Between the PacMate and the Braille Note, you know, and the Icon
sure.
and Braille Plus.
And the Icon and Braille Plus right now, when you think about the price and things like that, it's definitely a contender. It is a huge competitor for note takers. The Braille Note, they're about to come out with a new KeySoft update. I got to tell you, I have an SMA, so I have to get it. But
I mean, are these really worth the, what, $200? What are they?
It's usually, yeah, $200 for an upgrade if you don't have an SMA.
And some states are actually purchasing netbooks now. So obviously the only downside is that you get the instant power on that you might get with these note takers. But other than that, waiting 30 seconds...
We are one of those states, by the way. We have purchased netbooks for people. Again, show them the PacMate, Braille Note. We have a couple of Braille Senses around. And then the netbook. And the netbook right now is beating any note taker hands down.
When I worked for the Better Business Bureau, and people had this strange fascination at the time I had a PacMate, and they couldn't understand it because obviously there was no screen. You know, how does that thing work? And yet it kind of, to me, signals you out as being a little different, that you have this proprietary device as opposed to using what everyone else does. And I'm like, well, that's cool. You're using a computer just like, well, how do you do it? Well, it's got a screen reader and it talks.
Well, there's a lot to be said for that. We're talking about a 70% unemployment rate. We're talking about not only being competitive, but, you know, perception is a big thing in the business world. So you don't want to be perceived as having to use all this different stuff and it being special and, you know, all these hot button words that tend to make people nuts. If you can sit there and use the same type of device that your coworker is using, you are looking and being just as productive as they are.
And using the public transportation system, you know, versus the mobility minivans or whatever, so that you're out there in the mix and doing and acting and performing and functioning like everyone else. You know, like it or not, when we go out in the mix, we're always not only representing ourselves, but just the blind community.
I mean, you are representing other blind people. If you're hanging out with coworkers after work, a lot of what you do is going to reflect on other blind people. It's unfortunate, but that's just what it is.
Hey, that's the real world. I mean, that's, you know, dressing nicely and making sure that you're groomed and your hair is combed and you don't have bad breath and, you know, all these basic things. That's human nature. And people who don't understand that certainly need to do so. But let's talk about your podcast. What was the motivation to start that, and talk about what kind of topics you cover?
Try to cover like different pieces of technology that are being used by the rest of the world. I don't necessarily focus on blindness-related technology. Obviously, there's going to be a twist to any kind of technology that blind people are supposed to use. I've done a podcast on Amazon MP3. The whole world uses Amazon MP3. We kind of put the spin on it where how to use it with your screen reader.
So the Amazon MP3 music service is available at Amazon.com. You don't need to do anything special to get to it. I have JAWS on a computer right here, and I'm going to turn up the volume for it, and we're going to go ahead and do a demo of the Amazon MP3 service. First thing that you need to know, and I'm going to warn you in advance, if you are using this for the first time, if you click the buy button on any of the albums or any of the music stuff that we're going to be looking at, it will automatically buy it, whether you're signed into your account or not. If if it knows who you are, if the MP3 thing, the site knows who you are, it will buy the album. So you want to be careful not to click the buy button unless you're sure that you definitely want to buy the album or the song or whatever. It doesn't ask you for your username and password. It doesn't ask you for your credit card number. If you've signed on to Amazon.com before at that computer, the last person to sign in, and that's a little dangerous. I don't think they should be doing that. There is a way to turn it off if you go into your user preferences at Amazon.com, but just be aware that if you click that buy button, you will be buying the album, okay? Anyway, let's talk about it. First of all, what you need to install is the MP3 music downloader, and what the downloader does is it is a piece of software that runs in the background, and when you do buy a song or an album from Amazon MP3, it is what moves that song from the Amazon server into your iTunes or into your Windows Media Player, whatever you're choosing to use as your media player. Okay, these MP3s that you're buying are 256-bit. They're very good quality, and they are not super expensive. I mean, they're basically comparable to what you would pay at iTunes. The difference is they're unprotected, so you don't have to mess around with protection of the songs. You can move them to any player that supports MP3. So you can actually move them to an iPod if you want to. You can move them to a Victor Reader Stream. You can move them to a Zune. You can move them to anything that supports MP3. Okay. The 256 is pretty good quality. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and go to Amazon.com.
Windows M Desktop Folder View List View iTunes Internet Explorer Enter Windows Internet Explorer
Internet Explorer Thumbs Up
Freeze OD address edit, control shift enter, Amazon.com, online shopping for electronics, apparel, computers, books, DVDs, and more.
Okay, now, we're at the main page Amazon. Of Amazon.com. The first thing that I want to do is show you guys, we're going to do a links list. Well, let me get to the Amazon. Top of the page. We're going to do a links list and hit shop all departments. Okay, so I'm going to do a links list.
Links list dialog, links list view, a different version of his web.
And I'm going to hit S for shop all departments.
S, shop all departments.
And press enter on that.
So enter.
It activates the link for you.
Amazon.com space.
All right. Then I'm going to do another links list at this page.
Links list dialog. Links list view. V. Video on demand.
And I'm going to go home, ahead Amazon. And go to M.
M. Magazines and newspapers. No. M. Movies and TV. M. Music. M. MP3 downloads.
There you go. MP3 downloads.
Enter.
Press enter on there. And it will take me to the Amazon MP3 section.
Amazon.com.
Okay. Now, I'm stopping the speech as I go along.
Amazon.com.
I don't want to throw anybody off.
Page has one frame. 22 headings of space.
Now, on this page, there's always an MP3 daily deal, okay? The daily deal is an album that they're featuring for the day that is at a much lower price than what they're usually selling it for. And today, they have an album here. Let's see. I'm going to hit H to go to the first heading.
MP3 daily deal heading level 2.
And there it is, MP3 daily deal. And let's down arrow and see what we got here.
Link graphic Amazon MP3 daily deal. Link, today's special, the Who's. Link, who are you?
All right, so the Who's Who Are You is the special, and as you down arrow...
Link, everyday low price, $7.99.
That's their everyday low price, $7.99, and we're going to down arrow and see what the special price is for today.
Today's price, link $1.99.
$2, $1.99. And all you have to do is press enter on that link right there, and it will take you to the page that features the daily deal. So let's go ahead and do that.
Enter.
I'm not buying it, I'm just going to the page there.
Amazon.com, who are you? MP3 downloads.
All right.
Link.
And on this page, you can actually,
use Amazon.com, space.
Your arrow keys or any navigation keys that you normally use and get all the information on the album that you want. Now, it'll give you song listings, it'll give you reviews, it'll give you information on when it was released, things like that. If you go, now, the song listings are in table format.
Column 1, row 1, length, song title, time, price, link graphic, listen,
okay? And if you hit your T for tables, if you're using JAWS, it'll take you to the table, and we can get a list of all the songs on this album.
One, link new song. 413, link new song.
All right, so there's new song.
Listen two, link had enough, row three.
Had enough.
Listen three, link 905, row four. Okay.
And if you press the listen button on any of these,
link graphic listen,
which I'm going to do, it's a link actually. I'm going to press the enter on it. You're not buying it. You're just going to listen to a sample of it.
Enter. Listen link graphic.
Sometimes they're a little longer than you want them to be. And I didn't do anything. It actually went away by itself. But you basically get about 20 seconds or so of a sample of the music, all right? If you want to buy an individual track, you can use your table reading commands, which with JAWS, you hold down the Alt and the Control key, and you arrow to the right.
Song title, free, link 905, time 402, price $0.99, column right. 4.
And you see price $0.99, which is 99 cents.
Link graphic by track, column 5.
And then if you arrow further to the right, it'll say buy track, and that's your link to buy the track, which I'm not going to press enter on. I don't really want this album, but basically that's what it is. And if you would press enter on this link right here, what it does is it orders the track for you, okay? And it'll take you to a page that asks you, you know, do you want to download this? And when you download it, you must hit the open button. So don't try to save it. You've got to hit open, and the MP3 downloader will automatically move the album or the track or whatever you want to your default media player, like your iTunes or your Windows Media Player. Okay. Now, I kind of showed you how to buy a track, but if you want to buy the whole album, there is a link on this page. Remember, we're still on the page that talks about The Who's album, and I'm in the section with all the tracks and stuff, but if I go to the top of the page,
Amazon.
All right, I'm going to hit a links list here, insert F7.
Links list dialogue, links list view, Amazon.b, buy album.
And press B, and the first link there is buy album. If I press enter on buy album, it will obviously order it. It's not going to ask me for any credit card info. It's not going to ask me for anything like that. You know what? Let me go ahead and buy it. It's $2, whatever. Here we go.
Enter.
I'm going to go ahead and press enter on it.
Amazon.com. Thank you for your MP3 purchase. Amazon.com.
All right. Thank you for your MP3 purchase. Now, I have a pop-up blocker set up, okay? Normally, again, the MP3 downloader will start automatically, and it'll ask you if you want to save or if you want to open the track. And again, you're going to select open. It will not play it for you. It'll just throw it into your default media player. Okay. But in my case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a links list.
Links list dialog. Links list view. Amazon.com. 1067. To move the items, use the arrow keys.
And do a C for click here.
C cart. C click here.
There it is. And I'm going to tab to the move to link button.
Tab. Move to link button to activate. Press space bar space. Click your link.
Okay, so I'm on the click here, and if I down a little bit,
to start the download.
It says click here to start the download. If you use your arrow keys, now I'm showing you guys the quick way to do it, but if you use your arrow keys, you will be able to read everything on the page, and finally you'll get down to the point where it says click here to start the download, all right? Well, let me go ahead and start the download, and I'm going to show you exactly what happens. Now, Windows Media Player is my default media player, so let me go ahead.
Link click here.
All right, I'm going to press enter on it.
Enter. File download. Dialog. Do you want to open or save this file? Name. Who are you? .ams. Type. Amazon Digital Music Download.
All right. And it's saying, do you want to open or do you want to save the file?
Save button. To open button. To activate. Press spacebar. Alt plus O.
I'm going to hit enter here on open, on the open button.
Enter. Amazon.com. Thank you for your MP3 purchase. Windows Internet.
All right. And what's happening right now, it's not, the MP3 downloader from Amazon is not super accessible, but it doesn't really need to be. Because all it does is just moves your music from one place to another. So it moves it from the Amazon server to your Windows Media Player or to your iTunes, okay? I know I'm getting repetitive, but I want you guys to really be comfortable with the information that I'm giving you, okay? Once it is downloaded, I can actually go into Windows Media Player and find the album, find the individual tracks that I want to play, and I can add them to my playlist, or I can do whatever, you know, I can just play them right out of Windows Media Player. The other thing I could do is go into my music folder, okay? If you're not comfortable in Windows Media Player, it's okay to go into a folder called My Music. right? And that music folder is found under My Documents if you're using Windows XP, right? So you'll go into My Documents. There'll be a My Music folder in there. You press Enter on that, and it'll open it for you. And then you'll have all of your different artists in there. Press Enter on the one you want, and then it'll list the albums. Press Enter on the album you want, and it'll list the tracks for that album, okay? It's kind of a long way of doing it. A lot of people prefer Windows Media Player, but there is another way to do it if you're not comfortable with Windows Media, right? So that's basically it. Now, my songs have downloaded. I'm going to go
ahead. Alt-space, menus, and leaving menus, now downloading the track guitar and pen by the Who, tooltip.
Well, they're pretty much downloaded. What happens is the MP3 downloader from Amazon, the little software package that moves your songs from Amazon to your Windows Media Player, it pops up these little balloon messages on the bottom right of your screen. Sometimes JAWS reads them, sometimes it doesn't. Depends on what your settings are. But you know, if you minimize everything, you definitely can get to those balloon messages. And that's basically it, okay? So I hope you guys have enjoyed the review of Amazon MP3. It is my pleasure to do this kind of stuff for you guys, and please send me any feedback that you have on the reviews or on the product stuff that I do. If there's anything more that I can do, if there's any questions that you need answered, go ahead and email me, bill@billbullis.com. Thanks a lot for checking out the podcast.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB-2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.